Welcome to the Teachers on Fire podcast, where I profile agents of growth and transformation in education today. Each guest shares their highs, their lows, their passions, their goals, and the resources that are shaping their thinking and inspiring their practice. For show notes and links from each episode, visit teachersonfire.net. You can also follow the show at Teachers on Fire on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And of course, please subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Tim Cavey. Let's meet today's guest. Today, I'm thrilled to be speaking with AJ Giuliani. AJ is a dad, a sought-after speaker, and prolific author of several education books, including The PBL Playbook, A Step-by-Step Guide to Actually Doing Project-Based Learning, Empower, What Happens When Students Own Their Learning, and Launch, Using Design Thinking to Boost Creativity and Bring Out the Maker in Every Student. AJ is also a recognized authority on Genius Hour, Growth Mindset, IBL, and all things innovation in education. You can read more from AJ online at ajgiuliani.com. Follow him on Twitter at ajgiuliani and subscribe to the Scratch Your Itch podcast on any podcast app. AJ, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Are you ready to talk education?
Yes, I am. Thanks again for having me on.
Well, it's a thrill to have you here. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit more about your current context in education? What are you involved in on a day-to-day basis?
Well, that's going to be a lot. So I currently, my role is Director of Learning and Innovation for Centennial School District. And basically, I was the director of technology innovation, and then we merged our teaching and learning department with my department. So we've got just over 6,000 kids, and have a great team, an awesome team that I work with every day. And then I get a chance to speak around the country on things like design thinking, project-based learning, Genius Hour. Just published a new book this summer, the PBL Playbook. I have a couple of courses out there, and just continually active in blogging and podcasting, and putting work out to the world.
Awesome. And where is Centennial, AJ?
So it's right outside of Philadelphia. Go Eagles. All right. It's literally, you know, probably a 20-minute drive to the stadium in the city from here. So it's in the suburbs right outside of Philadelphia.
Okay. Sounds good. We're going to start where I usually do, AJ. Can you share with us about a struggle or some kind of an experience of adversity that you've faced somewhere along your education journey, and then explain how you overcame it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I was like a lot of people. I started off teaching middle school English and moved then to high school English, and I've been a K-5 and instructional coach and a K-12 tech coach. And when I was teaching, 2011. And it was just one of those years where I wouldn't call it necessarily a perfect storm, but it just was, you know, things were getting to me, right? Every time I would hand out an assignment to my kids, they would ask me, how many points is this worth, Mr. J? Like, where's the rubric for this, Mr. J? You know, if I hand in a day late, how many points do I get off? What's the overall percentage, right? Like, they're just completely playing the game of school. And I didn't blame them, because that's what they were taught to do, right? They're taught to play the game of school. My daughter's, she's 9 years old. She completely knows the game of school, right? And these kids were not caring at all about learning. They were just caring about grades. And so the year went on. It's probably about November, and I was just super frustrated because I didn't see them engaged. Even though we were doing projects, even though we were using technology, all the things that people say, if you do this, kids will be engaged. and what I started to kind of read and search for answers, because honestly, it was one of those times where, you know, you're like, well, I don't know if I can keep on being a teacher, because being a teacher is a very challenging job, but it also can be completely rewarding when your students are excited about learning, right? Mm-hmm. And my kids just weren't. And so I was struggling with this big time. And that's when I found Dan Pink's book, Drive. And that led me down the rabbit hole of intrinsic motivation, and eventually starting with my students, that same group of students, the first time I ever did a 20% project, or as a lot of people call it, a Genius Hour project. And it completely changed my career, what I thought teaching could be, what I thought learning could be. And my students were were never more motivated than when we did that 20% project, and I didn't even grade them on it. And so that really changed things for me, and was a struggle that I know a lot of people struggle with. It's just how to get kids motivated, how to get them engaged. And I found that by giving them choice, it was like a secret sauce to engagement and empowerment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that story so much. So many good things there. You know, even as we move to gradeless reporting systems or assessment systems in primary and middle school education systems, especially, I know it's a little bit harder or slower in high schools to go gradeless, but kids still have that fear of, if I do X, will I go down in my mark? Or, you know, if I take this risk, is it worth it? They're still making those calculations.
Yeah, a lot of times people... like I'll be around the country talking about everybody, oh, K-12 education needs to change and everything. One of the things I say is get the colleges to change. Like, mm-hmm. honestly, I'm kind of tired a lot of times of people talking about how K-12 education needs to change. We are still confined in a lot of ways by the system of how you apply to college, how you get into college, what colleges are looking at. And because more and more kids are going to college, or at least have that kind of dream that they want to go to college, a lot of our system is backwards planned from that. And so I feel like there's a lot of pressure on what can we do differently K-12, and not nearly enough pressure of what can colleges do differently to select kids and have kids be admitted.
AJ, you recently published the PBL playbook. You mentioned that earlier. Tell us, for students, or pardon me, for teachers that are, you know, seeking to implement project-based learning right there in their practice, what is one or maybe two key ideas that you would pass on to them?
Well, I would say the first thing I would say is start very small. You know, I made the mistake of starting really big the first time I did project-based learning. And because I started so big, I had all this control around it, right? Like, I gave my students 18 steps to follow and a very clear rubric, and I got like 28 back of the exact same thing. Chris Lehman calls that recipe-based learning, not project-based learning. But I would say, you know, it's really hard to go from teaching traditionally, lecturing, class discussions where maybe only a couple kids answer questions, to jumping into project-based learning. So, like, start with something as small as turning the discussion over to the kids in your class, right? Using like a discussion game or a fishbowl activity or symposium activity. Like, starting with that, leading up to, you know, a 1 or 2 day project. I think people always have this in their mind that they got to do like 6 weeks of a project, right? And then they do it the last day anyway. So I say start small, use time constraints to your advantage as a teacher. And then the other big thing I would say is let the learning happen throughout the project instead of the project being the assessment. And, you know, the Park Institute talks about this a lot, right? Is project the dessert, or is it the main course? And I love that analogy, because when you think about project-based learning, a lot of times people just think about, like, I'm going to teach my unit traditionally, and then at the end, instead of giving a test, I'm going to give a project. Whereas if you use the project-based learning experience to teach the concept and have understanding be demonstrated throughout the project in a number of different ways, then you're really allowing students to kind of own that experience instead of kind of dictating what they're supposed to show you at the end.
Awesome. AJ, at the start of the year, you issued an exciting challenge to educators called the 30 Days of Blogging Challenge. It got a huge response. Share with us what you had in mind here. Particularly, I want to hear, why should more educators take the time to write and reflect on their practice and then publish that writing out onto the World Wide Web, which is really scary for some teachers?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, because, you know, in lots of other industries, you know, people are documenting what they're doing all the time, right? And, you know, you could just go through the list. And, you know, in education, it seems like there's these researchers that are documenting stuff and putting journal articles out and stuff like that. But a lot of times the teachers get lost in the fray, right? And just any educators doing the work. And so by blogging, we're really doing three things. Number one, we're reflecting and documenting on our own practice, right? Things that have happened. Number two, we're sharing that with other people that can help them, right? So you do something great in your class, or there's an epic failure that happens in your class or in your school, and you share that. It's helping somebody either get through it, or it's giving them the motivation to try something new. And we need that, right? We need to share the good and the bad and have this kind of collective understanding of the experience. The third thing, you know, might be the most important thing, is that when you start to blog, you really start to see your profession differently. And I share this with people all the time, but when you start blogging, what you're basically doing is turning your profession into something that can improve. A blog is just like a time capsule. You know, you're putting stuff out there, you're sharing stuff out there, but you're constantly being able to reference back to different things, to think on different things. And a lot of us do this in our practice all the time, where we talk with another teacher that we're co-planning with, or we have conversations. But by putting that conversation out to the world, now you're talking with people in four different countries and different states and getting different perspectives. And so it's just making everybody collectively better. And I think sometimes the reason for this blogging challenge is sometimes we just need that community of people that is also taking the risk. It's really hard to take the risk alone. But when you see hundreds of comments of people saying, hey, I'm doing this, this is my challenge, this is my process, and they're throwing their blogs up there, it makes you feel like, yeah, I could do this too. And so that was kind of the idea of the challenge, is to get people fired up, so to speak, and also build that community around the practice of blogging.
Well, I want to personally thank you for issuing the challenge. It got a lot of people fired up around my middle school, and we've got teachers writing again who haven't been writing in a long time, and a colleague sort of sent that email around to the entire staff, and so you've lit some fires over here, and I know across the country as well. One of the other themes we've heard a lot from you, AJ, in the past few months is Be More Chef, which I know is part tribute to your late brother, but it's also an overarching call to educators. Summarize what you mean by Be More Chef.
Well, you know, my brother passed away this summer. And I think there are a lot of times when, like, you're put into that state of really thinking about life and bigger picture type things. And obviously going through that situation made me really think about some bigger picture type things. And maybe being a chef isn't as practical as possible. I think there's practical applications to it. But basically it's like this. You know, we can go through life, and students can go through school and just follow the recipes that adults give us. We can follow the recipes that our companies give us, and there's not much innovation or creativity in that. And I think people start off naturally as cooks, right? You're trying to follow a proven recipe and find success with that recipe. But if you look throughout history, the impact on the world has always happened from the chefs. And the chefs are the people that are starting with the basic first principles, the basic ingredients of any type of industry, and they're saying, what can I make with this? And so Be More Chef is kind of a call to action for teachers, for students, for anybody really, to really think about your life and what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. And are you just following formulas? Are you just following recipes? Or are you really thinking about how you can create something that is new and better, right? Which is kind of the definition of innovation that I use. And so Be More Chef is really just kind of a mantra that I've taken up. It's something that I saw in my brother's life, that he didn't follow the beaten path, that he beat a lot of different odds that were thrown his way. And I think that, you know, we have this notion in our head that, like, if you go to school and you get good grades and you get into a good college and you do well there and you get a good internship, that you're going to get a good job and you're going to have a great life. And it's just not happening anymore. Right, I mean, we have in the United States, for example, 30% of our 25 to 34 year olds don't have a job, and an even larger amount are underemployed. Right, they have a college degree, but they're working somewhere that doesn't even have anything to do with their college degree. And so, this Be More Chef is kind of a call to action to, like, think about how you can scratch your own itch, how you can do something unique with your talents and with your energy, and bring that to the world instead of just kind of following the recipes that are provided for us.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. There's so much compatibility there with, you know, content creation and the gig economy and the value of transferable skills, right? So yeah, we're getting away from the assembly line. So, you know, and maybe the assembly line is an outdated metaphor at this point, but we're really moving into an economy where, you know, where workers have to provide their own value and they have to sort of conjure up their own ideas.
Yeah, they do. And look, there's always going to be opportunities to follow and be compliant. But there's a whole lot more opportunities now for people that are self-starters, that are go-getters, that are creators and makers and designers and dreamers. That's what even employers are looking for now, you know?
Mm-hmm, totally. You know, one thing I really appreciate in the podcast space is all the, you know, the really inspiring entrepreneurs out there, people like Pat Flynn and John Lee Dumas and others who are creating content. They're not in the education space at all, but they are sort of sending that message that, hey, if you have an idea, if you have a passion, get out there and do something about it. And they're just showing what is possible if you sort of embrace the challenge of publishing and creating and making your own destiny in a sense.
Yeah, and I think there's lots of stories. You know, Pat Flynn's story is a great one, right? Of somebody who's an architect, and then he, you know, wanted to take this LEEDS exam, and then he took all these notes and he put them online and sold them as a course, and then he was making more money once he got fired as an architect or whatever, selling his online course, and was like, oh, I was like, what happened here? I followed a beaten path, and it didn't work out nearly as well as just putting value out to the world. And I think there's so many people that feel like they have nothing of value to offer the world, but they're completely downplaying that it may seem completely like easy to them, but amazing to other people, as Derek Sivers says. So thanks for bringing that up. It's a good example.
AJ, in my middle school context, we are focusing on empathy. How do we build empathy into our students, and how do we make it part of our school culture? Talk about the links between design thinking and empathy. How can design thinking play a role in building that important skill in young people today?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty passionate about empathy. And I think what design thinking does is it really provides a framework to start with empathy. You know, empathy is one of these things where you can be empathetic in a number of different ways, but it always starts with some type of awareness. And so design thinking starts with like looking and listening and learning. It doesn't start with you just jumping into something that someone told you to do. It starts with empathy. And so then when you start with empathy, you can start asking questions that have to do with your empathetic understanding of a situation. And then you understand the context of a situation through somebody else's eyes or somebody else's shoes because of empathy. But I really believe that empathy and the way that we can foster that in our kids and just people is probably with stories. And a lot of research says that like our brains pay special attention to stories, right? So it engages more areas of the mind than when we see or hear facts. And so when we learn a good story, our brain synthesizes like that oxytocin, and it helps us feel others' emotions and empathize with them. And you've probably seen this yourself, right? You've probably like, you don't care about someone or something, you have some preconceived notion of how you should feel about someone or something, and then you hear, read, or watch a story about that person or something, and then all of a sudden you have a newfound respect, understanding, empathy for that person. And so I know that it's not necessarily like the most innovative thing to talk about stories, but I think it's probably the number one way, if you look at the research around empathy and you'll kind of think, look at like what Ashoka, Changemakers, what everybody's kind of talking about, and stories, telling stories, sharing stories, putting them out there is by far the best way to build that empathy.
No, I love it. I think story is timeless, and I really appreciate how you've been modeling that, AJ. I read your snow cone story, you know, just from your own backyard, and you know, I showed my students a couple of months ago your growth mindset video on your channel. And I think that was your daughter, right, who was involved in that one. And, you know, the kids were just dialed in. And again, it's that power of an illustration that I think really brings home the point. in a way that just sort of thinking about it intellectually can't do it. So
I think it works all ages, all people, right? Stories work.
One of the reasons I'm really enjoying the launch model and your book there, AJ, is that it encourages learners to actually launch their final product or service out into the world. And we call this authentic product. So just kind of as a personal question, what can that look like in the classroom? Or can you share an example that you've seen lately of, I don't know, a set of learners, a class, a school that has been doing this in an exciting way lately?
Yeah, I mean, I think it differs for all different grade levels. You know, like at my school district, we had high school students that went through this design thinking process. And one of the people that they interviewed was a MIT cyclist. He's on the MIT cyclist team. And through kind of their interviewing and empathy, they realized that the cyclists really care about two things. They care about safety and they care about how they look, right? Like they care about their gear and their performance, you know, like these are the things. And so they started to ask a lot of questions and they basically said like, you know, they don't like these vests that they have to wear at night and they don't work that well and all that kind of stuff. And so the kids went through the design thinking process and they created a pair of cycling socks that have that reflector on the back of the socks. And when they did a whole test on it, what they found is that they were, you were able to see them, you're twice as more likely to be able to see them on the side of the road because of the up and down movement of the socks and the reflector moving than just the kind of like typical vest that you wear. And so they actually made these socks and produced them and put them out to the world. And now they're selling these socks, right? And so that wasn't their idea. Like when they went into the design thinking process, their idea wasn't, we're going to create socks, right? But by going through that process, it led them down the path of creating these reflector socks. And so that's the great thing about design thinking is you don't go into it being like, I'm going to create this. At an elementary level, we had teachers that were studying insects. Probably in every single elementary school, we study insects at some point in time, right? And what this teacher did was they reached out to like the local Orkin guy, right? The exterminator. And they brought him in and he explained to the kids about insects and everything. And then gave them a challenge to create an insect that would be really hard for him to exterminate. And so the kids did this, right? They designed all different types of insects using things that they learned. And so their final launch was to a bunch of exterminators and kind of a Shark Tank type pitch thing where they're presenting what these real insects would be like. And the winner was the one that would be the hardest to exterminate. So at a second grade level, like that's what it might look like, right? That might be an authentic piece right there. And, you know, for the teacher, it was like a week-long project. It wasn't something that took weeks and weeks. And the kids aren't going to forget about insects there, right? So I think it can happen very differently at all different levels. Trevor Muir, who's a teacher in Michigan, tells a really good story about his kids going through this process with World War II. They're learning about World War II, and they end up interviewing veterans of World War II, some via like Skype and some in person, and they create a documentary around these veterans telling their story. And they call around to local movie theaters, and one of them gives them a 2-hour slot on a Tuesday night, and they now have a premiere, and they invite the veterans and their family, and they call around every local carpet store and Home Depot, and they get a red carpet, and now it's a black tie affair, and they reach out, and ABC, their local ABC is coming to cover the story. And so now it's this big event, this big launch that came from them interviewing people and feeling like they want to share it with the world. So I think it can happen in lots of different ways. But I think most of the best ones that I hear about and I've done myself have been organic and been part of the design thinking process to naturally highlight and fix before that launch.
Fantastic examples. And thank you so much for sharing those. Those are definitely inspiring. AJ, what else excites you about education today? I know you're working on something, or there's probably another book cooking somewhere. So can you share any details about what you're focused on today?
So I'll tell you what I'm working on, and then I'll tell you what really excites me. And they're two separate things, but there's some similarity there. I'm working on right now, I'll be releasing I've been partnering with this company, Next Lesson, and developing PBL project experiences for educators. And so we have a K-2 bundle, a third grade bundle, a fourth grade bundle, and a fifth grade bundle. And working in my own district and working with a lot of elementary teachers around the country, I found that like we need to have a starting point, and it can't be Genius Hour. So Genius Hour is a good place to get to, but we need to be able to scaffold with different project-based learning experiences where kids have choice, where they're hitting standards and specific skills and those different types of things. And so I mean, we've got like over 200 projects being developed for people to have access to. And so those will be coming out late February. And I'm really excited about them because I know what's out there and I know what these are. And I'm just excited because they're using the design thinking process. They're giving kids tons of choice. It's real world applications, but it's also giving those teachers like a framework of where to start. And I think a lot of people need that, which is, again, why I wrote the PBL playbook. Probably the thing that excites me most about education right now is the fact that so many people are doing things differently. And so it's not one thing, right? But, you know, I would go around the country maybe 5-6 years ago, and you see a lot of people doing the same thing, which is integrating technology, right? I think if you think about like 5-6 years ago, and still there's still people that are beginning to do that now. But because so many people have got over that hump of like integrating, bringing in technology, now everybody's really thinking about the learning instead of the technology. And that excites me because great ideas come from everywhere. And to see the amount of educators around our country, around the world, that are thinking differently about teaching and thinking differently about pedagogical frameworks and thinking differently about how to engage and empower kids, like that collective groundswell of different type of teaching is what excites me the most.
It's phenomenal. I always go back to, you know, when I started in education and the internet was barely a thing at the time, you know?
Yeah.
And when I think about the global collaboration and just the inspiration that we pull from our PLNs daily, it is an awesome time to be in education.
It is. I'm with you.
Just quickly, AJ, what's another area of learning and passion for you? So, you know, you already mentioned the Eagles, but what I'm going after here is what really brings you alive in maybe a different way outside of the education space.
Yeah, I mean, I love sports. I was a coach for a long time. I love sports, whether it's coaching my kids now, or I play basketball this morning with a bunch of guys. I play every single week, and that's always exciting. But probably what I'm geeking out about right now, what I've spent hours and hours reading about, and hours watching footage and listening to interviews, is all about artificial intelligence. I mean, I'm not necessarily in a place where like some people where I'm scared about it. I just want to go into this thing eyes wide open. And I feel like right now we're boiling the frog. There is tons of artificial intelligence already around us, part of our lives. And it's like we're the frog and we're getting boiled, but we don't even know it's happening because it's a slow boil. And so for me, it's just being cognitive about those things. And I get that, you know, a lot of people, we don't have the time to read so much about it, but there's a great Wait But Why. I love Wait But Why and Tim Urban post on artificial intelligence. I'll send it to you so you can have it in the show notes, but people should take the time to read it and at least have that understanding of what it currently looks like and what it could look like, because things are already drastically changing, but it's going to happen even more so. So that's what I'm geeking out about.
It's an intriguing field. You see the auto complete suggestions creeping into our Gmail, right? And I think how long before that starts creeping into Google Docs, where students are actually composing. And, you know, it's interesting to hear the opinions of people like Musk, right? Who's kind of pessimistic, I think, about AI in some ways, but it's an amazing, amazing field. So here, AJ, I'm just going to ask for some quick picks. So whatever's at top of mind, why don't you share with us some of the voices and resources that are shaping your practice in some way or inspiring your thinking? So starting at Twitter, tell us about someone there that we should follow and share why they've been inspiring you lately.
I would say I love Jen Gonzalez's stuff. She's Cult of Pedagogy. She's fantastic. She talks about a lot of stuff that I wish I could research and talk about, but she does a better job about it. And so I look to her as almost like a North Star in a lot of the stuff, and good friends with her now, just because I've been pestering her for so long about how good her content is. And so we've struck up a lot of conversations, but I love Jen Gonzalez and the Cult of Pedagogy.
Point us to an ed tech tool that you currently love in your own professional practice, or maybe one that you've really admired in the classroom.
I think there's a lot of them out there, but one of the ones that I think has been that stepping stone for our educators the past couple of years has been Pear Deck. Nearpod does the same thing, but just getting every kid's voice involved is a great stepping stone to doing some other different things. So I love Pear Deck.
Recommend a book, one that you've been reading lately, or one of your all-time faves, and tell us why you recommend it.
Yuval Noah Harari's 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. Just finished it. It's about artificial intelligence, but not just that. It's just a lot about our current way of doing things and where all the arrows are pointing, so to speak.
Now, we mentioned the Scratch Your Itch podcast. Looking forward to more episodes from that. Tell us about another podcast that you've been listening to lately.
I'm not necessarily just follow one podcast type of thing. I normally, what I do is I get interested in people and then I listen to everything from that person. So like that, I'm just kind of thinking about like how I go through it. But I do like Shane Parris's called The Knowledge Project. And it's called The Knowledge Project. I've listened to a lot of them. The one that he just did with one of the Lux Capital founders was fascinating about some different things. So The Knowledge Project is something I would check out.
Now, see, I can't wait to look that up and check it out today. The Knowledge Project. I'm pretty sure that one's not in my deck. And tell us about a YouTube channel that you're enjoying or you're referring educators to. You've got your own, and I love what you're putting out there. Is there another one that you've been enjoying lately?
Yeah, I mean, I think my co-author, John Spencer, has an amazing YouTube video. If you haven't seen John's videos, his sketch videos, you can go to spencervideos.com, and that'll bring you right to his YouTube channel. But he just has so much good practical stuff and inspirational stuff up there. I love what he's doing. And he's consistent about it, man. He's putting out the work. It's fantastic.
I don't know how he does it, but those are so cool. AJ, the last one is just for fun. It's one of those human questions. What are you watching on Netflix these days?
Oh, man. My wife and I, so it's not necessarily on Netflix, but it's on Amazon Prime, and we're deep into The Americans. And I feel like everybody's a spy right now because we're like in late season two, and you know when you just get stuck into a show, and so I'm like looking around like who could be a spy around here. But yeah, we're watching The Americans. I love it. It's a great period piece, and it's exciting.
All right. Well, I can promise you, I am not collecting intelligence on you right now. So
you never know.
AJ, this has been a blast. I am so honored and thankful that you took the time with the podcast today. What are the best ways for people to follow you and get more of that great content?
Yeah, I would just say head over to ajjuliani.com. I've got my free toolbox over there, my Innovative Teachers Toolbox, lots of different things for you guys to interact with, videos, articles, books, all that kind of stuff. But that's where I would head to, ajjuliani.com.
Well, again, AJ, I'm just so grateful. Thank you so much and take care. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk again soon. Hopefully one day meet in person. But until then, keep doing that awesome work for educators. You are making a difference, my friend.
Thanks so much and good luck with the podcast. Listening to it. You guys are crushing it. So keep up the great work, man.
Thanks so much for joining me here today on the Teachers on Fire podcast. For show notes and links from this episode, visit teachersonfire.net. You can also follow the show at Teachers on Fire on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Medium. And again, please do subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Tim Cavey, saying goodbye for now, and we'll catch you next time right here on the Teachers on Fire podcast.